Hello and welcome to the latest Brewing podcast, and this week we are talking about Brexit. Now, this is not a new news story, we know, but try as we might to talk about other things, we probably feel it's our duty to give you an update on this important and fast-moving story. And no doubt there'll be one or two similar updates before the end of March. But despite these caveats, I think you'll find it a fascinating 20 minutes. But before we get there, please first listen to our disclaimers.
The value of investments can fall and you may get back less than you invested. Past performance is not a reliable guide to future performance. The podcast is not intended as investment advice. No investment is suitable in all cases. Any tax allowances or thresholds mentioned are based on personal circumstances and current legislation which may change. We or a connected party may have an interest in the securities mentioned or may act as principal or agent in those securities from time to time. The podcast content comes from diverse sources whose accuracy cannot be assured. The opinions expressed in this publication are not necessarily held throughout Brewin Dolphin. Investment in currencies other than your own means changes in the exchange rate will cause the value of your investment to move independently of the underlying asset.
Hello everyone and welcome to the latest Brewin podcast. I'm Ben Gutteridge, Head of Fund Research, and today we are joined by Head of Research, Guy Foster, which must mean it is a Brexit update. And of course, we're delighted to deliver such content. The clock runs down closer and closer to the date, and we will attempt now to bring some clarity to a pretty complex situation in terms of what the various actors' strategies may be. And I guess give some sense of what the outcomes could be and ultimately bring it all back to markets and I guess sterling in terms of what we think the fortunes are for that asset class and perhaps some other major asset classes as well. So Guy, thanks for taking the time to join us. There's a lot of news as ever on this story. Of course, we've got the Independence Group, I guess, dominating the headlines this week. But I think, you know, perhaps we'll begin on next week's votes. We don't have firm clarity on what the votes are going to be, but can you give us some sense of perhaps what the PM might be thinking in terms of the options she's going to be giving Parliament next week?
Well, I think her strategy, since we last discussed this, has been sort of laid bare a bit by Ollie Robbins being overheard in the Brussels bar. So that confirmed what we believe, which is that the Prime Minister wants to run down the clock and present Parliament with a deal close to the Brexit deadline, where the option is either that, or as he phrased it, a very long extension. So not quite deal or no deal, but deal or, you know, more of this enduring agony. And the point there, obviously, is that people voting now on a Brexit deal are trying to placate their constituents, who are quite evenly spread, so they don't want to be seen to be kind of throwing in the towel too early. But it is assumed that when push comes to shove, ultimately, you know, the thing that can't command a majority under normal conditions will be able to command a majority under those kind of battle conditions. So that's what she'd like to do. But next week,
has the clock run down enough?
I think the clock is possibly not run down enough. You know, there will be, I think people go into that week thinking that they have options, that they've got choices. If the Brexit isn't hard enough for them, then they can register their protest, and that if it's looking too hard at the same time, then Parliament can register its protest against that as well. And that's probably the biggest threat, is a potential return of a Cooper Bowles style amendment, and one that then forces the government to, or places considerable pressure on the government to try and extend the process, or seek some alternative way out. And that's a challenge for the Prime Minister, who wants to get her deal through. It's a challenge for the harder European Research Group type MPs who don't want to see Brexit watered down in any meaningful sense. And that's going to be, you know, that's going to be a difficult needle to thread come next week.
But what can she offer Parliament in terms of the deal that will be on the table? Is there going to be any meaningful change to that vote that was so sort of spectacularly failed all those weeks ago?
Well, maybe is the answer. It seems like what we would describe as the sort of deal with lipstick type approach, which is that the deal itself has not been sort of opened up and changed materially, but perhaps some sort of codicil is added to it. That kind of sounds like what is rumoured to be being worked on in Brussels at the moment, but we're getting sort of great mixed messages from that.
More than just language, more than just sort of goodwill, there is actually something that would be legally binding?
Some language is legally binding. Okay, you know? Yeah. I mean, it's all just language at the end of the day. As we know from all the sort of the efforts to get legal, you know, counsel's advice exposed, it may well be unclear what is legally binding. And I think that's one of the reasons why you want to sort of run the clock down as far as possible before kind of showing all of your cards.
But it's sort of Geoffrey Cox, is it, our Attorney General? We want his opinion on the quality of this addendum.
Well, I mean, he's supposedly involved in the negotiation on this occasion, although he has certainly been over to Brussels with the Brexit minister. So, I mean, presumably he will... he'll have had some input, but I mean, previously he's given sort of slightly woolly advice that, you know, on balance, it's probably worth going for, but is it totally legally binding in the way you'd want it to be? No, you know, so it's going to be, it's going to be difficult. We don't know at the moment how it's going to be presented, but we know that, we've heard that the EU are considering what amounts to a clarification, perhaps, of the backstop. Maybe it amounts to removal of the backstop, but we assume it's more of a kind of clarification of it, a codicil. And they want to know that it's going to pass in Parliament.
Of the backstop, and that doesn't sound too helpful. A clarification
that it's going to be that nobody wants it. You know, I mean, we don't know. I mean, I guess if it's a clarification that nobody wants it, that's going to be a difficult sell. If it's a clarification that it's temporary in a legally binding way, then that's going to be a much, much easier sell. But the EU want to know that it will pass Parliament, and so that quite possibly is going to be something which is up for discussion in Parliament next week. But, you know, perhaps what gets voted on is the idea that in a week's time that gets voted on or something along those lines.
So it could be this is where sort of the complexity comes in, but I guess it could be a vote that if I can get this codicil, will you support the deal? And therefore, if the EU get a good enough signal read on that, then they will put the codicil in, or will they have to put the codicil in first?
Precisely.
Right, okay.
You know, one of those kinds of options. It's all sort of happening. It sounds quite last minute. As I say, I wouldn't be surprised if next week you get an endorsement of an opportunity to endorse the process, like the one that was failed a few days ago. But with the added news that a codicil or something is on the way, and that perhaps there's a further vote planned in order to properly test that, because they haven't had the sufficient lead time in order to do so for next week. But you know, it really is just speculation. Exactly what's going to get voted on at this stage.
Okay, and to what extent does this sort of independence group muddy the water? I mean, clearly, or you suspect these particular MPs would have not supported the government codicil or not, no matter what deal that came back. They're so sort of opposed to the this withdrawal bill, this government strategy. But does that give does this group have, forgive the pun, momentum, or is it a home for disaffected Tories and Labour MPs to go to if the vote next week goes the wrong way?
It's got some momentum, and it is a home for disaffected Tories and MPs. Particularly if things don't go as planned next week. So the momentum is that it wasn't just seven people; it was seven people, then one person, then a further three people, and from the other side of the floor as well. So that's established that kind of momentum. It's established more of a kind of cohesive message that this is now more about Brexit than it was, say, about anti-Semitism in the with the first seven MPs. In cold, hard numerical terms, it doesn't really do anything because it technically reduces both the number of MPs both parties have got, therefore it technically reduces now the government's majority by three, or by six, arguably. Because the whip had ceased to have much meaning in relation to Brexit-related matters, it kind of doesn't really make any difference. But it does establish that kind of credible place to go for those who don't want to take a very hard Brexit approach. If they want to take a sort of softer or approach, then this is the kind of central ground that they can go to, and that I think changes the balance a bit for the Prime Minister and perhaps for the ERG over next week's vote. So it's going to embolden people to express their softer Brexit type views more boldly.
Okay, now I'm not necessarily going to go back and do some counting, but I think you've said we don't know the most in any podcast that I've sort of executed with you. But despite the fact that there is so much uncertainty, I guess we want to try our very best, recognising and caveating how speculative this may be, about the most likely route or routes this could take. And perhaps there are a number of routes that will end up in the same place. But what is your anticipation of how this might ultimately unfold from here?
Yeah, so, I mean, we... by the 29th of March, as we know, one of three things needs to have happened. Either there needs to have been a deal, or the UK needs to have left without a deal, or it needs to have achieved an extension to the negotiating period. And our expectation is that a deal is most likely, and an extension is second most likely, and a no deal is pretty unlikely. The most likely outcomes are that that deal occurs either sort of unchanged or with some what we'd call lipstick applied to it, so effectively some not particularly meaningful changes to the deal, because if you do need meaningful changes to the deal, then you're definitely going to require an extension. And I would say that the chances of that kind of lipstick option have gone up quite considerably, because it sounds like the EU are prepared to play ball to some extent. And that's kind of, to apply the lipstick. Yeah, exactly. They've chosen the shade, or maybe they're choosing the shade at the moment. And there's a few things. So firstly, that's been the story this week, really, that something is being worked on. But also last week we had the story that they're looking at this March the 20th to 21st EU summit at which to make the sort of big reveal. And that, I think, is the political balancing act, is how you can try and keep that option alive until that date without having Parliament sort of stamping all over it with their big size 12 feet. So that will be that's the real kind of political challenge for next week. So I guess the idea of the deal going through unchanged has gone down. The idea of superficial changes to the deal going up and it passing has gone up. The chances of an extension probably gone down, just on the basis that that the deal chances have have gone up a bit.
And do you mean extension as in a meaningful extension? You know, there are some circumstances where the deal could get through, and through the process of a legislative procedure, you could be a moderate extension.
Yes, yeah, I think you've got a slight overlap in that a deal might require an extension, but it might be essentially done by that stage.
Yeah.
So I guess that's what we're kind of leaving the deal side of the fence.
Yeah,
the
fine.
Extension is like extension because we haven't got a deal.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
So, you know, chances of second referendum still look pretty remote. Chances of general election, that's you know, up for debate, but I don't think we would change our odds of a general election, which is still like sort of 5% this side of the resolution of Brexit. And the rationale for that really is that, you know, arguably the independent group, when the Labour Party looks like it's falling apart over anti-Semitism, then a bolder Prime Minister might think, yep, I'll take advantage of that, get myself the majority I desperately need in order to not have to worry about all these minority groups. And then, you know, you'd be job done. But since then, obviously, the independent group is no longer a principally anti-Corbyn thing. It's become more of a Brexit-related issue, and it's got and some Conservatives have joined it, and there is the potential for other Conservatives to join us as well. So that will kind of that what it means is that it just shows how desperately you don't want to be fighting a general election on Brexit. Neither side wants to be fighting that election because neither side has a coherent and cohesive message. You know, you'd be much better getting Brexit sorted out and then trying to tempt these people back into the fold, or defeating them in a forthcoming general election that isn't fought on this very difficult and divisive.
But it's not all in the government's hands, is it? I mean, if you get if Labour can by and large hold its line or hold its nerve, whatever you want, on opposing any deal, and you have this all the other parties, the independence group, SNP, Lib Dems, you know, voting down the deal, and you're looking at a no deal scenario, then a vote of no, you know, the Labour Party could trigger a vote of no confidence and actually rally
the
numbers.
They could trigger one, but they can't pass one. You know,
but
based
on the idea you have some Tory defectors, you know, you had some Dominic Grieve saying he couldn't support the party on a no deal,
yes,
and things like
and
that.
And if that were the case, then you enter this 2-week period in which the government can try and re-establish confidence of the House. And so under those circumstances, we would anticipate that they would take no deal back off the table.
Okay.
and thereby re-establish the confidence of the House, and that general election would be averted.
Okay. Oh, fascinating. And then I guess we come to no deal, which in part has been discussed there, I guess, because there was the route to no deal.
Yeah.
May well trigger a vote of no confidence that takes the PM in it, or delivers a U-turn on the PM.
Yeah, I mean, like, my notes against no deal just say this is the default option if none of the above has taken place. So, as you say, we kind of discussed it. You know, it's assumed that if you start really staring down the barrel of a no deal Brexit, there would be a confidence, it would be an opportunity for a confidence vote to be tabled. And it seems likely that you would attract enough votes from that group, and the independent group adds to this because it reduces the formal majority of the government. So I think you can assume that under those circumstances, exactly what we've described would take place, and the government would effectively have to fall or bow to the will of Parliament and do what it needs to do in order to regain the confidence.
So coming back to the deal getting over the line, you've done some work on parliamentary math on this, but you know, do you need a lot of Labour MPs to back the deal? Do you need every sort of Tory, or you know, the vast majority of Tory MPs to support it? What about abstentions? Is there, what do you think is the clearest way for this deal to pass? Do you think sort of Labour abstentions or?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I mean, I think, it depends, obviously. It's assumed that you lose sort of say 10 to 15 Conservatives who won't vote for anything. Then you gain, well, you know, it's whether you do or don't gain five or so real strong Labour Brexit rebels. And then to the extent that MPs, Labour MPs are prepared to sort of vote against it, if the alternative is no deal, I think it would be quite limited.
Okay, so given that various sort of set of scenarios, if we do tie it back to markets, and as always, we sort of sterling is the release valve, the transmission mechanism for the success or not of Brexit. If on that basis, sterling looks like there is some upside for the year ahead.
Yes, I mean it's not colossal, but there. And we've had a pretty decent run in sterling since mid-February, or over the last week or so, after what have been a bit of a sort of a fallback. But I think you look like there's probably sort of 8 to 10% or something upside in sterling if Brexit gets resolved in a reasonable manner, and that's reflecting the fact that actually the labour market's still pretty strong, wage growth is now is getting a bit more robust. So there's quite a lot of pressure really for the Bank of England to be raising rates if it wasn't for this sort of glaring issue which has the power to sort of upset all that.
Okay, and we know our governor's pretty cautious on the whole topic, so it might do a dramatic U-turn in his, you know, commentary if it can all get resolved.
Yeah, and there's definitely some debate. I mean, they refused to say that they would definitely be easing, so that's where the bank is in conflict really with the market, because the market is saying the bank will definitely ease in the event of a no-deal Brexit. The bank refused to make that promise, saying that both, you know, output and supply are going to be restricted. So actually there is a balanced case for tightening or easing, given that you would have inflation in a tight contraction of supply capacity. But I think we all still feel pretty confident that they would be easing, or at least on a easier trajectory, a lower trajectory of rate hikes in the event of a no deal Brexit than they would be in the event of a deal being secured.
Okay, great. Thanks, Guy, for all those comments and thoughts. As I said, it's a very complex and uncertain environment, and appreciate your attempts to tie it all together. I guess we're going to be speaking to you in a couple of weeks' time, perhaps two or three times before the end of March, on the basis this story is going to be moving quite fast and can be increasingly in the investors' vision. Okay, that's it from our podcast this week. Thanks very much for listening. Let us know what you think on iTunes, leave a review on SoundCloud or on iTunes. Let us know on Twitter, referencing hashtag Brewing Podcast, what you think. But until next time, many thanks for listening.